I'd like to introduce you to Louis Carter, who's a plastic surgeon who's got more than 40 years of experience traveling to various countries. I think he's been most in Kenya, but he's also been in Nigeria, where he lived for 10 years, and also to Zambia and to Papua New Guinea. And he's going to share his experience of plastic surgery, and I think particularly hand surgery.
Thank you very much. These will just be a few principles for the general surgeon working overseas. I have no disclosures. I wonder nowadays, if I went out to Nigeria in 1974, I wonder now if general surgery really prepares us to work in these settings. But anyway, the following principles I've found are helpful in my 32 years overseas. Book resources by Drs. Park and Price on global surgery is very valuable, and also Dr. Peter Nthumba from Kajabi, Kenya, and I have edited a book called PAX, Principles of Reconstructive Surgery. If you work in that part of the world, I'd be willing to give you a digital copy of that. But it's written for general surgeons performing plastic and hand surgery in resource-poor settings without any available consultants around. Always need to be suspicious when you see funny things over there. This is a skin graft site, donor site, and a young girl. This is a forehead laceration that didn't heal after it was sutured in a young man. This is an unusual mass, isn't it, behind the ear. He also has got a little one on his nose. This is a young girl that was presented to us as a burn patient. Actually, that's not a burn. You know, you can look at that. There's no burn skin around that scar. And we found out that after surgery, that her both parents were dead, and that she had already had herpes zoster, which is quite common in people that have AIDS. And she did. She was positive, and she was treated. You see some deep burns, and you wonder what could cause that. Well, on the left you see is leprosy, and on the right is epilepsy, where the patient fell face down into the fire and almost burned his face off. Always have to recognize potential problems. Here's a leg wound that in Nigeria that three grafts had failed. And you'll hear from me right now, but I'll talk about this one word over and over again because it's so important: ownership. You've got to own your wounds. If you don't own your wounds, they'll never heal. Anesthesia is so important to working in these settings when you have patients with this neck contracture like this. So these are just the basic principles I'll talk about: ownership. My favorite wound dressing is honey. You've got to prevent contractures and burns. Keloids, I don't recommend you do those unless you have low dose of radiation available. Anyway, these are just wounds and more wounds. And as any of you who worked overseas, you know that you see wounds and more wounds. Wounds like this is where a skin graft did not take three times. What's the problem? Well, it's obvious that you look around, that wound is avascular, and you have to do a real good debridement of the avascular tissue. You close that in 10 days with a flap. You can do other things, but the best way is the flap, but that's not always that easy. You know, the problem with wounds is they're often treated with skillful neglect. Any of you have been overseas, you know that, and oftentimes it's there. You give that the care of wounds to the junior doctor or nurse. But all these wounds, and they stay there for years and years, a lot of morbidity and some mortality. And certainly it costs a lot when they're having dressings after dressings. Here's a chronic wound that presented to us just a few weeks ago in Liberia, 10-year history. He'd had several skin grafts that had failed. He needs an owner. Well, he found an owner. And after several debridements, we were able to graft that and get a good healing of the wound. So chronic wounds, ulcers, need an owner. They have to have an owner. Is not a junior doctor or nurse. You should be a senior surgeon who is willing to take time to treat the wound like a family member would. If not, you get this: a marginal ulcer, A marginal ulcer is very common all over the body, especially the leg. And if you amputate this in this older man, what's going to happen is he's going to be bedridden or maybe chair ridden, and he's going to die. He's not going to have a good quality of life. And I don't advise people to amputate these. I did one time, but I realized they'll never get a prosthesis. If they do get a prosthesis, they won't know how to use it, and they'll have a very poor quality of life. So I think just let these people enjoy life for a few more years. You need to prepare wounds, of course, well. And I use this. I have these, actually, Weck blade with me. I didn't bring it up here, but it's anybody wants to see it. You debride it not just every week, but you need to do it every couple of days and then get a graft on there quickly. Here's just using the Weck blade to take off the granulation tissue, and then this is skin graft, split thinness mesh skin graft. These are just the instruments I use for debriding: the Weck blade, Gullion handle, and I have an example, a set of that here. Debride every 2 or 3 days, not every week, every 2 or 3 days, and then graft. Now, in between the grafts, imprinted debridements, what do you need? You need honey. Honey is all over the world, and honey is wonderful. Here's bush honey, just out of the beehive. Anyway, this is the honey. The best honey, as many of you may know, is from New Zealand. It's Manuka honey. It's also from Southeast Australia. It's a non-peroxide honey. It's available here in the States now, just in the last few years, called Medi honey. It's antibacterial due to methylgloxal. It penetrates the biofilm and kills the bacteria. It's fantastic. Now, raw honey doesn't have the same properties of penetrating the biofilms, but it does have its antibacterial activities due to low-dose peroxide. It comes from the honey, and it kills most everything. Maybe not fungi like Manuka honey, but everything else. I just found this on Amazon the other day. This is a new honey that's in America, Manuka Doctor. But if you look at the fine print there, it says a product of New Zealand. But you can get in local pharmacies here, you can get the Medi honey, which is also from New Zealand, export to Canada, packaged there, and then import in the States here. So honey is cheaper than silvadine. It's your dressings every other day or every third day even. It keeps the wound moist. That's the main thing, keeps the wound moist. We know that wounds heal best when they're moist. You can hold the honey on with food wrap, saran wrap. Honey does everything. It's hyperosmotic, antibacterial. It's really an antibacterial agent that promotes wound healing, facilitates good granulation, and removes the exudate with hyperosmotic, cleans the wound up, and really it prepares the wound for debridement and grafting. I'll show you some wounds like that. Silvadine is available now around the world, but it's usually expensive. It comes in small tubes. Now here's a wound for 6 years in a young football player. He kept playing and kept breaking it down. So, of course, what does he need? Well, you know that. It's an owner. Excisional debridement with the Weck blade, or Humby knife. You can then do it one layer at a time, sometimes 4 and 5 layers, really, till you get down to normal, soft, bleeding tissue. And you can graft that, but you can't graft on that hard tissue that is avascular. Vax are not available overseas in most countries, but they can be homemade. Vax can be pretty expensive, but you can take foam rubber from anything. I'll show you where I take it from in just a second. But use an NG tube, and you can use a saran wrap, food wrap. You don't have to use Alban or Vidrate. But you can only do it if you have 24-hour electricity. That's the key. You've got to have 24-hour electricity. KCI has a new product downstairs that runs on battery for 16 to 18 hours. The problem is you have to recharge it, and then you have to, the canister, you have to dispose of it when it gets full. It's about, I think, 150 cc's. Where I get it, go to the furniture manufacturers. And there is foam rubber right there. They use it in the cushions for the chair. Take it back to the hospital and get it ready for the use. And you can use gauze, too. You don't have to have foam rubber. This is food wrap. Okay, and burns. We want to, again, I use just honey for that. It's wonderful. Same reasons exactly. Just holding on with this food wrap. This is actually stretch wrap found from Home Depot. If you have, but you can get overseas. Most every country I've been to has, some sort of food wrap you can find. You want to prevent contractures. Contractures are horrible. But you don't want to let the patient be in a position of comfort. They'll go in, they've got all sorts of bad positions with their elbows up and their axillas in. They need to be in a safe position, position of protection. And these are just the positions of protection. It's not easy to do. In a low resource setting, you need fiberglass, but they don't have fiberglass, so you have to use POP for splinting, and that doesn't work really well. Neglected burns will always develop contractures. If you have to treat contractures, you should wait 6 to 12 months. You incise the scar very superficially, and then you push, and you get with tension on the extremity or the finger, and you get it out to where it's straight. Mid-axis to mid-axis, you have to, a joint contractor, you've got to go from one side to the other. Very important. It's best with flaps, but you can use skin grafts and splint for 3 months. And this is just positions that we put joints in after we release them. And I'll show you some pictures of these in just a minute. Fingers, the MP joints have to be down in flexion, IP joints in extension. You can hold them in that position with K-wires or even in small children with just needles. Hips, rarely you have to splint that, but sometimes you do. Put it in Buck's traction. Then this is just a child I did actually before 6 months, about 4 months. This is one operation. I saw this child 2 years later. This is just shows what time will do. We released him, and I saw him back 2 years later, and he was great. Just one operation. This is a technique I learned in India, is that on neck contractures, you really need to take out the platysma. Platysma has memory, so you can always release the scar, take out the scar, but you really need to take out the platysma before you graft. See something like this, you got to sort of run from this because, you can get in real trouble if you can't intubate this child. And this child, we couldn't, but we had a pediatric anesthesiologist with a fiber optic scope, but he couldn't do it either. So we had to use ketamine, a local with epinephrine, and then we prepped him and released him and intubated him and then released him further. And there he is after first dressing change or 2 weeks later after we put a skin graft and a stent on there. Now this is the same thing, but as you see there, he has a tube in place, so we had everything ready to do the other technique, but we were able to get him intubated. Not all contractures are the same. There's a contracture of the neck that have been operated on several times and recurred. You can look at the angulation there of the mandible. This child had a burn very early in life and had deformed the mandible, so we had to take out bicuspids on either side and then we need to wire together the mandible, so it's an MMF, so the fracture will heal, and also so the contracture would not come back. Axillas are difficult to hold with just skin grafts, so you can't really. You have to release the axilla good and put not a skin graft in with a flap. That's with a YV flap on your left and with a periscapular flap on the right. Sometimes you see contractures like this. The child came in walking with his hips flexed, and you see where the umbilicus was after we released it. Now we put a flap, a TFL flap, tensor fascia lata, over the joint, but over that lower abdomen, all we need is a skin graft. He will not get a recurrence. With the flap, he will not get a recurrence. This is a knee contracture. You can release the knee and put a skin graft back there, but I guarantee you he'll get a recurrence. So what we do is a thin fasciocutaneous flap. It's a saphenous flap. It's the same fascia you see in scarpus fascia in the abdomen. And you can just release that thing and do a, and then you do a mid-axis to mid-axis. You see there's a little blue dot up there on your upper right picture, and then one on your middle picture, the lower, where we have stars there, where you do mid-axis to mid-axis release, and then a flap in there, a saphenous flap. It'll never come back. You can you can let the skin graft heal and take off the dressings and let them go. Sometimes you see bad burns in a child. What do you do? In a young child, you're going to have to excise that dead skull and put a skin graft on dura. On an older child, you can sometimes take an osteotome, or a burr is best, and take off the outer table, let it granulate there, and then you can skin graft them. Perineal burns, you need to elevate the perineum off the bed. You can put a dowel stick here and attach to the ankles with plaster Paris, and then raise that up in the middle, raise the stick up and attach it to either an orthopedic bed or an IV pole or something like that to keep the perineum off of the table. Not with, gauze's ear is not going to do very good with the dressing like you see there now, because he'll soil that. But anyway, if you use a dowel stick and raise it up off the table, you can then clean the perineum as often as you need to. Well, you see some unusual head and neck tumors. You can't cure neurofibromatosis, but you can certainly debulk it. Another child that was debulked with the expander in, and that's after the tumor's been taken out with the expander, the child will have to probably have more operations in the future. The child with a bad hemangioma of the face, that we don't know if it's involuting or normally, or whether it had some sort of native drug put on there and to cause it to do that, but we use the forehead flap. Forehead flap is not the greatest thing in the world, because look at the scar left, but the child came from Comore Islands, and we were told this young girl would probably wear a head cover the rest of her life, so we went ahead and did that. You can see great color match. Medulloblastoma is so common, but you can resect with just 1 to 2 centimeter margins. Ideally, you reconstruct with a plate and a reconstruction plate and a free fibula, but you can also just reconstruction plate. This man I saw 2 years later with a reconstruction plate. He did not extrude it, but that's a complication. Clefts, I just say this, it's most important to do the cleft lip, but do the cleft palate so the patient will have good speech. You have to do the cleft palate before 2 years of age for good speech. Of course, any age, there's a great stigma with a cleft lip, and this man was from Papua New Guinea was no longer going to be called monster. So there's a stigma attached to it, cleft palate's not visible. Cleft lip is. If they have a cleft palate, they may not come back in after the cleft lip is done. Keloids, again, I don't recommend taking keloids out unless they're very small. You can use triamcinolone on small keloids. I use the intracheloidal incision when I have to take one out. This is an intracheloidal incision. It doesn't look great. I could use triamcinolone now on that. The scar, that's leaving a little 4 millimeter margin, so you don't, if you take it out that margin, you can stimulate more keloid formation. But anyway, this is an ideal case for radiation post-op. I have to have it post-op, but there are not very many countries where that's available. Just folliculitis, keloidalis. This is infection. You can take that out. Same thing. Use that. You can use a cautery, take it out with a wet blade. The wet blade, take a layer after layer till you get down underneath the infected follicles. And then you can skin graft. And always, of course, use honey. Anyway, infections, just need to be aware of all these bad infections that are necrotizing infection. That was the Fournier's gangrene that's already been debrided. Ludwig's angina, these are dangerous. Thorns cause felons, they cause tenosynovitis. You can have injuries where you have a damage to the finger, where you have both flexor and extensor tendon injuries, pulley injuries in no man's land. The take home message here is if you have a stiff finger, you're going to have a stiff hand. If you have a stiff finger, you're going to have a stiff hand. I don't care what the stiffness is due to. If you need to do a ray resection and take out that stiff finger so the patient will have good movement with the rest of the hand. Thank you very much.